Good evening. Welcome. My name is Rebecca Seaman. I am interviewing, or, well, not actually interviewing, just getting
just
to
hosting.
Being lucky enough to listen to and meet these alumni DJs from WSUA and WCDB on our 40th and 25th reunion.
Hello, Capital District. It's great
to
be back.
We're here.
Hey, guys and gals. It's 6 o'clock in the big town. No, it's 6:40 or so.
Okay,
and it's cold up here.
It's cold up here. What's with that crazy weather here? That's
Felix Iverone. I used to do the oldie show on Sundays. Probably my most memorable on-air time was it was getting a little late. It was about 9:30, and I got a call from Vinnie Barbiglia from J.B. Scott's. He says, "You got to give away 40 pairs of tickets tonight. We got Rory Gallagher." And I'm like, "Dude, it's getting a little late. I probably have 40 people listening."
And what were your years?
I was on air from 79 to 84.
And I'm Steve Otruba. At various times, the DJ, chief engineer, production, sports, a little bit of everything. I was here from 77 through 83, 84, something like that.
Kept everything plugged in and running. I remember when I got here, Steve, I was helping keep things going. I remember how everything used to fall apart constantly around here. I don't know if you guys have the same trouble these days. Always operating on a shoestring. But
what were your years?
I'm Phil Chonigman, by the way, although some people knew me as Dan Phillips, depending on which show they listened to. And I was here from 81 to 85 during the crazy early 80s. And I did... I was head of news and public affairs for a couple of years. I was an assistant engineer, production studio, rock DJ, jazz DJ. I basically lived here, which is why I didn't get my degree in 85. By the end of the time I was here, I ended up finishing up my schoolwork in later years. But I'm sure that's the story for many of the people here. What a place this was. I mean, it's so wonderful to be back.
Can I be heard, or can I come closer?
Lean forward.
Hi. Hey, David Goldman here. I was a student here from 76 through 80 or so. I was on SUA briefly, I think for a couple of shows when I was training. Back then what they used to do is they would train you, I think on the AM station. Well, there wasn't an FM station actually at that point. So they trained us here, and then I think the guy who was training me was nice enough to let me do a show or two, and I was on the AM station, and then went off. And then when we went FM, I think we went FM during March of 78 was when we signed on, right?
That's correct.
So I was here, as was Jim. Jim was okay. I'm not gonna. You can tell it, but I was one of the first DJs on the FM station in 78, and I did. I'm trying to remember. I wish I could remember. I was on like Fridays and Tuesday afternoons or something. Back then, I think they did 3-hour shifts, like 12 to 3 or 3 to 6. And I always had like at least one or two shows a week from then through the middle of 80. And I think I came back for a couple of reunions and did some shows then. I don't think I had any elected position because I was actually a performing arts major and was at the Performing Arts Center when I wasn't here. So I basically spent all my time shuttling between the two places. I was involved with, I don't know if you guys had, we had a couple of like comedy shows that were on the air here as well. One was Radio Free Albany, which maybe Kevin Kelton, if you haven't already spoken to him, could tell you about. And I was kind of the resident pianist, writer, actor for that. It was great doing a comedy show. Unfortunately, what used to happen is that we never really rehearsed, and we would show up half an hour before we went on the air with scripts, and it was very much a seat of your pants, kind of the way Saturday Night Live is done now, I'm sure. We went on half an hour before we went on the air, we'd decide what to do, and we'd kind of throw it all together, and it usually worked out, and we usually got some nasty letters and cards and stuff after that. So it's great being... I haven't been up to the station here since, like, the 80s, so this is... Really?
Does it look the same?
Almost, yeah. Why don't you guys paint or something? Why don't you, like,
it looks a little stripped down.
Plant some flowers or something. You got all this money now. You're putting up all these... I don't recognize the dorms anymore, but the radio station looks like, you know, it did in 1978.
Don't we still have the carpet on the walls?
It's still... Yeah, look at that.
And I'm Jim Saturno, and I was on earlier, and that's really how everybody used to get on the air around here, probably still does, which is you come in, you don't leave, eventually you get in front of a microphone and you start talking.
It hasn't changed that much.
Well, believe it or not, I actually came to Albany, one of the reasons was because of the radio station, because of these guys setting the groundwork. I was interested in doing radio stuff. I had done a little my senior year in high school, and when I came to tour the campus and heard these guys, I was sold on this place as a place to come, because I knew it would be a great place. I mean, some of the concert things that happened were memorable. I mean, they leave an impression on you. I know that being in news and music, I got to do a lot of interviews, and one of the greatest interviews I got to do, unfortunately not in the studio, we couldn't get him up here, but Dizzy Gillespie was playing at the Egg downtown Albany, and that was such a wonderful experience.
He played Page Hall when I was here.
Did
he? He must have come back. Yeah, he definitely did a show under our for Concert Board.
And I had to go downtown. Wow.
Well,
got in with the.
But we've had people come up here. Like, you could probably.
But as a newsman, you know, you get these passes to go backstage and interview these people. It's an incredible experience that you don't forget.
All the concerts that we got to go to, being related with the radio station.
Few of the concerts we had right here in the studios.
You want to tell us about that?
Who came? Yeah.
Who was here?
What bands have we had here?
Well, we definitely had people.
A lot of local bands played here. And so, and there
we
were
had
a lot
Blotto
of,
in here.
I'm sure Blotto
twice.
Came up.
Pat
Blotto.
And Zaney.
Yeah. Really?
I remember the Violent Femmes. Came
really?
Up here.
Really? Came up here?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's after our...
And the Drongos, which is not a particularly well-known band.
Wait, I know that name, though.
The Drongos, yeah. They were a New Zealand band that played for a while and tried to make a go of it in the States. Didn't quite catch on, but they were good.
Did you guys have the Bangles or anything?
I remember... No, I don't remember the Bangles, but I do remember... before Dr. Laura and all these other doctors was Dr. Ruth.
Yeah.
Dr. Ruth came up here for an interview in this very studio, and we had to, on these regular chairs, she was too short. You had to put like a phone booth on the chair to boost her up so she could be near the microphone. It was really funny.
Yeah.
You got to do some of the late night shows. It was like you never wanted to sign out. It was always like one more song. And
let's keep us on the air.
3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
Are you guys still on 24 hours a day?
No, unfortunately we're not.
Mm.
Kind of mostly in the day, but that's when most of our listeners are actually listening, so we try to catch a listener.
Oh, we didn't care whether anyone was listening or not. It made no difference.
We definitely had 3 to 6.
I know a number of people.
It was definitely a 3 to 7 slot, right? Or a 4 to 7?
Yeah, there were a few groovy, and I remember some people doing shows in their underwear in there when it was really hot. At 3 or 4 in the morning, I mean, it was like...
We have a few late night shows.
There were a couple of either jazz or shows that were... I don't know if the right word is experimental kind of shows where people would play like sound effects. No, these guys aren't here right now, so I guess we can talk about it. they played all kinds of weird, spacey kind of music and stuff.
RPMs.
The RPM?
I'm asking you.
RPM?
Was it RPMs?
What is RPM?
It's a genre of music.
Oh, I don't know if they called it that then. It was just very spacey.
Yeah,
very
kind of spacey. We didn't even have a genre name for it.
No, it was called like that weird
spacey
music.
Space.
It was
Lira
Bardis. Yeah, it was Lira Bardis.
Yeah.
It was Lira Bardis, right.
What, like what, Philip Glass kind of stuff?
Even before that. No, because Philip Glass had a musical. This was more like, you know, Chance. Stuff you would hear at like, you know, intermission at a Grateful Dead show.
Or like... Electric Prunes,
Weird stuff.
Yeah, this is really weird.
There's probably several stories of people putting on like an album side, going to the bathroom and coming back and getting locked out and not being able to get back into the studio.
Yeah, I've had to open a few doors.
I mean,
it's a little closer than what they are now. Yeah.
We had no, but I did one semester where they gave me a 7 to 10 a.m. show, and I wish I could have done more with it. I hated so much getting up that early. Meanwhile, there were people who would do
drive
it.
In the normal market,
that would be a great show.
Great.
7 to 10 is what you want. I didn't realize that I had this audience of kids that were getting up and trying to get to school and stuff, and I could have become, you know, like the morning zoo guy.
I remember I had a high school groupie from Albany High School who would listen, and she'd call in my show whenever I was on. She would find me. It didn't matter which name I was under. I mean, she would always give me a call.
Talk about the woman that used to call all of us up.
Oh, her. Yeah.
Aka. Who?
Aka. What's her name?
No, she had like a regular name, I thought.
She'd
call up and say, Aka, Jeff, Aka.
And for early morning shows, I think I had the early morning Sunday one. I was probably the last classical DJs on the station.
Oh, yeah.
Used to do that Sunday mornings. Actually,
tell us about that.
Surprisingly enough, it was probably the biggest audience I had besides some of the jazz shows. Mm. Because, you know, Sunday mornings, at that point, we were probably the only classical on because, you know, some of the, like GBH and some of the other stations were playing news at that point. And, you know, we had a pretty good classical audience back then. And it was fun to do. Tough to wake up for, especially on a Sunday morning.
Classical didn't even last into the 80s, though. When I came, there was no classical.
No, I think 81 is when I did the last one. And
really?
Did you get signed off after that?
Well, yeah, we had plenty of jazz.
Yeah.
And when we were here, there was a guy who used to do a reggae show.
Yeah.
I got Dexter Powell, who introduced me to reggae when we were here, and...
We still have reggae.
You don't have Dexter Powell.
No, we're not done.
I remember some world music kind of stuff. I mean, they didn't call it that then, but...
Well, the names of the styles of music, though, I mean, you went through... I mean, just in the early 80s, you had Third World, which then became Urban Contemporary, which then became rap and hip-hop. I mean, it was, you know, same music, just kept changing names over the years.
Next generation.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. That's one of the things about us, actually, is that we were actually fortunate to be at the station right when New Wave was hitting. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think when I was in high school, maybe the first Ramones album came out, or maybe right when I started college, and the first, what was the other one, Patti Smith, who was not exactly a punk, but, you know, it predated that.
Yeah, with that whole CBGB's crowd.
So as a result, a lot of bands, you were talking about who's been up here, I don't know who actually came up to the station, but the concert board and us presented a lot of acts that were probably made their Albany debut here. Talking Heads is the famous story, if I should tell that story. Okay, well, there was a band from Long Island called the Good Rats, who only people from Long Island have ever heard of. They were a melodic hard rock band who never really made it outside of Long Island. They were good, but they had a pretty big following because of all the Long Island kids here. So it was the end of 77 in November. Talking Heads were the opening act. And Talking Heads had just released their first record. A lot of people didn't know who they were yet and didn't know what to make of them because they were so straight-looking and so anti what rock bands looked like back then that most of the Good Rats fans were, like, booing them. You know, you stink at all. You're terrible. And then there was a bunch of kids in the balcony with, like, glued-on safety pins going, yeah, Talking Heads, man. Elvis Costello did a show at... Is Page Hall still used for...
I think it is.
Page Hall used to have, if we couldn't fill the Palace Theater, we would have a show in Page Hall. So Elvis Costello played Page Hall. This is what our concert schedule was like. Elvis Costello, right before this year's model came out, did a show. Literally a week later or 2 weeks later, Warren Zevon did a show in Page Hall also.
Yeah. Warren Zevon was one of my great experiences here because Rich Schenkman, who was the program director, and I went to Warren's hotel room and spent the afternoon getting toasted
really?
With Warren
Zevon. Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
He came out and put on the show anyway, but his manager was really pissed because we had taped the interview and... So the interview didn't go on, and we had stayed so long, the interview didn't go on the air until the next day after the show. And so,
I don't remember hearing that. That actually went on the air?
I don't know if it ever went out on the air, but it didn't go out before the show, and so his manager was really mad at us at the show, and we thought we'd had a great time, and the manager is yelling at us.
It was very weird, because it was at the same time we had the New Wave people, we also always had, like, Jerry Garcia played here, and Charlie Daniels, and Renaissance, and I'm trying to think of the other big shows we had here.
Well, back in the late 70s and early 80s, there was the annual...
Outside?
Yeah,
Mayfest. Is it still called that?
Do you guys
Park
have...
Parkfest?
Yeah. Oh,
it's not Parkfest.
It's not here on the campus.
And we used to have it in fall also.
We had a fall one.
Like fall 77 or something.
The first show I ever saw here. The first show I ever saw here was Roy Buchanan.
You two played here. You two played on this campus, right in the back there.
Yeah.
Really?
Right, like in 82,
right where they built the new gym over there.
Yeah. They were the headliners at Mayfest.
And we got Bono to do a station ID for us.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where that is, but
it's
got to be somewhere.
And they were sort of big by that point. I mean, not huge.
They had records.
Yeah, they started that before.
Why don't you guys tell us about
Sunday,
your shows?
Bloody Sunday, I think, was...
What you played and what they were like.
I had an oldie show Sunday nights. We brought in our own records. We played the records from here, but we played... It wasn't your quote-unquote tight-listed oldies. We played all the B-sides and bubbling unders, and we took requests. People, not only the college kids, but people that lived in this area.
Tell us what you mean by oldies. Oldies to the new generation.
These people think Blondie is oldies.
That came after us.
50s and 60s was pre-73.
Especially a lot of sort of mid-60s garage bands, psychedelic stuff.
That was great. We got a lot of calls from people that lived in the area that would listen to that show, that didn't listen to the other oldie shows.
No hitting the tables. You're not allowed to hit the table and shake the microphones and make all
sound effects.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It's my show. Radio. Remember that.
We're small, but we have big hearts. So
let's see. Like I said before, I was the last classical DJ. Also did a jazz show as Ned Jones.
Why was that?
Yeah, it just happened. It just went with the voice at the time. Back at that point, quite a number of our jazz DJs took on second names. They were, Steve Otruba, doing their rock show, and Ned Jones,
Because Steve Otruba didn't have any jazz cred.
Yeah, And you just, sometimes you did so many shows, you just wanted to change things, and you did Ned Jones and dropped your voice a little. And
no one called you up and said, hey, you sound like...
Yeah, but hey, they just...
You can always deny it.
All right.
They can't see
plausible deniability.
Exactly,
yep.
Exactly, they can't see
I got a face for radio, as they said earlier today.
I actually remember doing a show once where, because I was doing both news and DJing, and I used two different names for them when I DJed the rock shows, I actually recorded my newscast and scripted out a thing where I would interrupt myself and to really throw people for a loop so that people who thought it was me were fooled into thinking, well, maybe it isn't the same guy.
You did your own news?
I did my own news, and then I scripted stuff where I would talk over myself, and I would use the other name to refer it back and forth. It was a blast. It was a real blast. So I did rock shows. One of my favorite things was the 10 Most. I don't know if you guys do anything like that. We would count down the top 10 played songs of the week, or top 10 played albums of the week, every Friday night, I think it was.
Yeah. I don't think we have a show like that now, but it's certainly a good idea.
We would record the logs of all the new releases and what was being played, and then play the 10 top ones at the end of the week.
That was a lot of fun.
My show was a combination of, it was anything I really liked, but it was a combination of stuff that I'd grown up with before college, like, I don't know, Beatles, Elton John, and stuff like that. But then, because I was exposed to so much great new music here, which I think I said in something I wrote, of course, all the new wave bands that were coming out, but as well, I didn't really know music history that well, and I was exposed to a lot of even Motown and blues and the roots of things like the Nuggets stuff and all that. So I played whatever I wanted, and I was known for doing, I would occasionally put together a theme set, which was either songs all about a certain activity. I found an old tape of mine where I was playing songs about musicians, about working musicians, and I played a Rupert Holmes song. Rupert Holmes actually made records before the Pina Colada song, if I can put in a plug for Rupert Holmes. And he had a song about we had a song about being a studio musician that I played, and I played the Band Wore Blue Shirts by Joe Jackson, talk about obscure records. And then I would do like a set of school songs, and then I would do a set of whatever. So they were known for being the theme sets. And then I would throw on, occasionally I would just throw on stuff just to see the reaction I would get. And I think originally I didn't like punk that much, but I think finally I wound up playing a little bit of the Sex Pistols or the Ramones or whatever. But I even threw on, I think Barry Manilow came out with like a rockabilly record or something once. And I put it on just to see. And I think what I did was I played it without announcing who it was, just to see if it would freak people out. And then people, same thing with, I think I played Donna Summer once and got one or two very nasty calls. And it was the rock, it was like Bad Girls. It was one of her kind of rock oriented things. Just to see the reaction. Because I always said that if somebody came out, if Barry Manilow or someone came out with a song that really rocked or whatever, I would play it. I didn't care.
Well, that was one of the things about being a DJ.
That was what was great.
Was that we had so much freedom to play whatever we wanted. And so, like David, I used to play pretty much anything that would occur to me.
Hey, college radio, there's nothing like that.
It would be really interesting to listen to some sort of garage band after this or something sort of country rock-ish or...
I'm curious to find out what each of you think were the top three or four groups in the years that you were here that was the most played? I
mean, Springsteen, probably.
Yeah. That was the other thing.
Talk about band. I mean, he played at the Palace Theater in 77, and then in 78, and then he played at RPI in 78. So he was here, like, 3 years in a
row. Despite the fact that he only released one record the
entire time. Yeah, only one record at that
here.
Time, but he was here, and,
Costello, we played a lot of Costello.
Costello.
I have the... In fact,
one promotion, we played way too many Pretender songs.
There's a program guide in the display case out there that lists the top 10 albums for, was it 79 or 80? And it's really interesting because it's really a mix. There's some new wave. I think the number one album of the year is The Wall, which is hysterical because The Wall came out in like November and it was the top played album of that whole year. People played it to death. And then like bands that no one remembers anymore, like The Tubes, were like number two or three.
Mm. Played a lot of Clash.
The Clash made it probably the following year because this was 79. But it was like a mix of like Led Zeppelin, The Pretenders, Costello. It was very strange. It was kind
of by the mid-80s, I guess it was the top groups were R.E.M., The Cure.
Really?
Echo and the Bunnymen was one of the top albums of the year. I mean,
Depeche Mode
was just really breaking in at that point.
Yeah, that's more my brother's era.
Duran.
Yeah. No Duran. That was a little too pop for us at that time.
WCDB has always had taste.
No, they're back. They're like, Did R.E.M. come up here? Did you ever get R.E.M.?
R.E.M., no. Couldn't get them here. And we had a lot of the groups from Athens, Georgia, that came up here. AOK, I think, was one of them. What's Active.
Oh, okay.
All the Mitch Easter stuff that he used to produce the records
from
for.
There, but I don't know if they ever came up.
How do you guys feel about the station now, like the way it is? Do you have any feelings, thoughts, or comments?
More power.
We haven't heard it yet. We haven't really heard.
Upgrade.
Yeah, more power.
We have internet broadcasts.
Listen every now and then.
Can we do that from like New York or whatever?
Type in wcdb.albany.edu.
And how do you use a computer again?
Were there computers when we were? I don't know. Did we have? We didn't even have computers.
We had cards.
I took a look at their newsroom, and there is no newsroom. They don't do news. It's a library.
Well, wait. How do you get?
Do you have a news department?
We really don't. Not right now, but we've been trying back and forth to get it up.
You don't even do local news? I mean, you don't cover student
like
government
show. You don't have any public service shows, just like campus related shows?
Not really.
Remember on the podium?
FCC? FCC doesn't require you to do public affairs programming or anything like that?
Not with the internet.
Not anymore, I guess.
No, not with the FCC the way it is now.
FCC doesn't require you to do anything.
Yeah, really.
Except not to swear.
If anyone from the MCC is listening, we love the FCC very much.
You mean we can't give us more power? You mean we can't say the sh word or the f word or any of those? George Carlin's seven words still count on the air? It's incredible. After all these years, 30 years since he came out with that, and you still can't say that.
And it's good still hearing the station. I come back through this area quite often. My family's still in the area. And it's good to constantly hear the different mix of music.
Time for a station ID? Is it 7 o'clock?
Yes, it's getting close. Does anyone prefer to do it?
You're 90.9 now. We used to be 91 FM.
You were 91 FM.
Now there's more precision.
It's now everything is digital.
They can't say 91?
You can't say 91 anymore.
We are WCDB Albany, 90.9 FM.
There you go.
The Capital District's best, WCDB.
Coming with a gigantic 10 watts at you.
They changed the phone number.
What? Yes.
Oh, it's not 7777 anymore?
No.
442-4242. They did that my last year.
Oh,
so there's any alums out there right now who want to call in.
Yeah, call in.
Come up.
Can we take phone calls on the air? Can we
No.
That's right.
This used to be a meeting room.
Meeting
room.
Well, Steve helped build the FM. So, Steve, why don't you just...
This was an empty meeting room until about mid-77 when we started putting up the walls.
You're talking about the AM days. Okay, right.
Yes, our crooked walls. The exit there was the entrance to the meeting room that we had here. And, through 77 and 78, through all the trials and tribulations of, getting the walls up, getting the equipment in, And then in March of 78, we got on the air.
You know, that,
tell us about the broadcast antenna and all the problems you had on the air.
Is that why it took so long? Because, you know, my sophomore year, there was no station at all. I think after my freshman year, from like September through March, there was no station at all because they were so busy. I mean, they were building, right?
But I remember there was no signal. Ira, in particular, being on the air here, like before we officially got to flick the switch, because we'd listen from our apartments downtown.
And, oh, you could hear it?
And we'd hear Ira testing in the middle of the night.
Yeah, we were testing, getting equipment working, and making sure our transmitter was going.
He's a guy to talk to if he has. Has he come up here already?
Ira will probably be here this weekend, I'm sure.
Because he's like an instrumental.
He may have been here earlier.
Oh, guy.
Where was the first broadcast antenna?
Up on Staquan.
Where is it now?
It's on Eastman Tower.
What is the Eastman Tower?
Eastman Tower is Staquan.
Okay, that is Staquan.
Yeah, didn't you go to school here?
Yeah, I did.
We initially wanted it to be on Indian Quad, but Dr. I've Got a Famous Brother said no.
Right. Yes. He's gone now, so we shouldn't talk about that. Because the weather station was on top?
Yes, we didn't want to interfere with the weather station.
Well, there still is a weather station. Yeah, it looks like there's something up there still.
But yeah, we had our two giant balls up on the roof of State Quad.
Can you say that on the air?
That's an FCC.
Okay.
The FCC's
Come on, keep going.
And, and I mean, the reason we had those big balls on our antenna was once early before we had put those on during the winters here, you know, ice would build up on the antennas. Well, you get ice building up on the antenna, it reflects the power back and kind of burns out your transmitter.
Oh.
Don't want that. We want to keep the music going. So, you know, we've got our 10-watt station up there and kept it cranking for years. Had SUA going at the same time some of those years.
Tell us about that.
Well, WSUA was our carrier current station here in Albany for 40 years now. Basically, it was a broadcast radio station that was broadcast through the wires of the campus. So basically, you could pick us up through the wiring on campus, but not beyond it. And, you know, one of the other side effects of going through the power wiring is you had a buzz. And hence the theme, Buzz Along With Us.
The SUA is not, the AM station doesn't exist now, right?
We only have an FM station now.
Because there was talk that they were going to, I thought they brought it back at some point. There was talk they were going to make it.
No, it was probably used through training through about the mid-80s, and then they shut them off. I'm not sure if they ever took them out of the basements of the various quads, but
really?
There may be some janitor closets with AM transmitters in them somewhere, but nobody probably knows where they are.
You couldn't pick up the AM station like in your car on the on the street or something?
No. Couldn't pick it up in a parking lot.
Oh, okay, so it was... No, because I remember Robert Klein did a concert here one time, and Robert Klein says, what would he say? Oh, I love to plug in my iron and listen to WSUA. Because, every time I turn on the light switch, there it is, you know. Because CDB, I know you could hear on the
yes,
road. My parents, as you said, when you're on the road driving, you definitely can pick it up. But that was an improvement.
But WSUA was just strictly,
only in the
uptown and downtown campus only.
Oh, do you
and
get it?
Slightly off campus, but...
Yeah, could you get it in the apartment buildings and stuff?
Not really. I mean, you get it within, say, 100 feet of the buildings, and that was about as far as we transmitted.
But it did have that, you would hear it, and it sounded like, it did have that buzz.
A good old 60-cycle buzz that you got from the power.
Yeah.
And you were here when it switched over?
Yes.
So tell us about the switch, because that was a big deal.
Yes, it was a big deal.
You want to tell what the first song they played was? You know that, right?
No, actually, I don't.
Well, trivia question.
What was the first DJ?
What was the first DJ? Listen.
That's right. The first show was that. Actually, we debated for weeks about what the first song should be. You know that there were a lot of deadheads here who thought that Long Strange Trip was the theme song of everything.
So, you got to play Sugar Magnolia, man. That was the first song you play.
But we decided it would be Born to Run, and I happened to be lucky enough to be the guy to actually be the
first DJ
to play it.
Oh, because it was your shift.
And so Yeah, so that's how we started it. So
the boss, Bruce Springsteen.
Were you on, what was it, noon? Was it, what was the...
Yeah, it was like mid-afternoon.
Yeah, we had a big event going, and...
Yeah.
There's a photo
out
there.
Was there actually...
Yeah, actually, that was the general manager came on the air and talked and made the announcement and said, you know, we're... flicked a switch and said, we're actually on the air. We finally made it. Mm-hmm. And
I seem to remember we had some folks out on the podium with radios. And
yeah.
It was filled. This room, I think, was full of people, too, where we are now, because that was the DJ booth, and I guess...
Still the DJ booth.
I went, right. No, but I mean, when I came up here to say, Jim, maybe I should come up and see them go on the air, and it was like, you know... A room packed with people.
So it was a really big event, of course.
Yeah.
But
no, it was big.
Yeah, for the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Then everybody just
then everybody left. Everybody just hang out on the couches in the other room. But,
and everybody had like 3 hour, I guess like 3 hour shifts, and then you were on. Who was the second person? Who came on after you?
I don't remember. Might have been Alan Corey Kaufman.
Yeah, I think so, but I'm not sure.
Really? He might be coming up.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I remember when we boosted the power up to 100 watts, which I think was 83. I think it was the spring of 83. Yeah. It was spring of 82 or spring of 83.
That's only 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. So what was the power when you first went on the air?
We were 10 watts when we started
watts,
off.
Right.
Yeah.
10 watts to 100 watts. That means you can hear it 10 times as far away, right?
Well, we're not quite, but...
Or 10 times as loud.
It basically gave us better coverage downtown for the folks downtown, although we still bounced around some of the, you know, Capitol buildings, but, you know... Basically, we could get us in all the dorms, occasionally get over to Troy so the folks over at RPI could listen to a different station.
Well, they definitely could hear us in Troy. Yeah. I used to get phone calls from there and stuff, yeah. People would call it.
Depending on the weather conditions.
Oh, well, okay.
The weather
conditions are still quite a while away.
Are they?
Yeah.
I always thought at night...
Or not that far.
You had a better chance at night of being heard, right? Because the signal is... There's less interference.
There's less... Because of the weather, it's usually calmer.
It's calm, right.
Mm-hmm. So,
what did they do? Did they commemorate
going 100 watts? Was a big event. There was out on the podium by the fountains. They had everyone gathered, and the president of the university came and dedicated something.
Oh.
Which I understand the current president of the university is coming to this banquet we're having tomorrow night to commemorate.
I don't know
the
if any of you guys read the Times Union at all,
there
was a big article this morning when I opened the paper about WSUA and WCBB. I was very excited. I'm like, I'm a CBBer. So.
And I also hear through the grapevine that they gave some kind of a commemorative plaque or something from the county legislature for this. And it's
I didn't hear anything about that, but I'm sure we'll find out about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wind up now. If you guys have anything else you'd like to tell us about the station or how it's changed, how you feel about it now, or what your favorite memories were, now's the time to do it.
I'm glad you're still going.
Figure out how it's changed as we listen over the weekend.
Yeah, we want to have a chance to hear.
We're gonna have to come back and find out how it's changed.
Mm-hmm. And we'll make sure we'll keep it going for another 25 and 40 years.
Yeah. Oh, much longer.
So 40
that,
years. The AM station started in 1963. Really? Okay, I thought it went back even further than that. The AM station.
Okay, so you're listening to WCDB 90.9 on the 40th WSUA reunion and the 25th WCDB reunion years. We're going to turn it back over right now to DJ Bake in there. Looks like he's getting a request, so we'll give him a minute. Because, you know, you guys all know what it's like to be in there with the phones.
We were an engineer, phone answerer, ripened log. I don't know how we did it all.
Good evening, or good night, really. What time? Does anyone know what time it is?
It is 7:25.
WSUA News Time, 7:25.
This is Rebecca Seaman interviewing WSUA, WCDB alums.
No,
CDBs.
I take that back. WSUA alums.
There's a famous book called CDB, children's book.
We are 40 years now.
The Sporty 640.
Also with us.
All right, so why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Ernie Sprantz again, for round two, as they say.
I'm Alan Soloway for the first time.
There you go.
Doug LaWanda, class of 76. I was sports director of WSUA my junior and senior year, which would have been the fall of 74 through the spring of 76.
I'm a 1977 graduate, and I worked on the sports staff, and once in a blue moon when they couldn't find someone to do a show on Saturday morning, I'd fill in.
But more importantly, Al was Al's attic.
This is true. The halftime show of the football games.
So we'll be hearing you guys tomorrow, right?
We will.
We will.
Well, I understand that there's a setup on the hill or on the grounds rather than the press box. And Mark Gronich has arranged for Sports Alum to do some aspect of the game. I don't know how they're going to do it, whether the guys in the press box throw it down or whether it's just a taped version. I don't know what the plans are, but I understand we should exercise our vocal cords for tomorrow.
Use your radio voice.
Yes.
Part of the problem is I never had one, and it's not gotten any better over the years.
So tell me about, tell not just me, but the listeners about SUA before it was CDV.
WSUA was an integral part of my life for sure. I would be remiss if I didn't first say that the charming wife of 27 years, pardon me, 26 years, who's is sitting to my left.
It only feels like 27.
That's right. We met on campus here a freshman year during the summer orientation, and Jean has supported me throughout, or she did support me throughout my 4 years of involvement with WSUA, so much so that athletic director Joe Garcia at the time recruited Jean to be the donut coffee lady in the press box for the football games during the year. And Gene was there throughout the fall season when we would do football, and it was just great to have her there. You asked about WSUA. It was fun. It was exciting. It gave us a tremendous ego boost for the moment while we were doing the games. We worked hard. We thought we were professional. And I know I'm proud to say that when I inherited the sports department, there were three people on staff. And when I left the sports department, there were 20 people on staff. So I'm very proud of that small legacy in the mid-70s.
Looking back, it was probably a good career move not to go into radio or stay with this professionally whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to make a decision when I was a junior whether to pursue communications or to follow a business degree, and I ended up choosing accounting as a major. I'm a CPA, but I still long for the microphone and an opportunity to talk.
Did you actually put that much thought into choosing a major?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
My junior year, I took the Albany Guide, laid it out on the table. I said, let's see, 18 credits of education, and I'm a social studies teacher.
Well, I know that.
Not that I haven't taught a day in my life, but you know, I got the degree.
When I was choosing back in '72, as we were graduating high school, what university we were going to choose, what college we were going to choose, I was either going to be a math major or a radio announcer. And when I realized that for every one of me, for every 100 of me, there was one Marv Albert and there was one Vin Scully, I knew right off the bat that I wasn't going to be good enough. So I looked at mathematics versus CPA and business, and I chose business, and it was good choice. But enough of that stuff. Let's get back to WSUA.
WSUA.
Alan, you're staring at me.
Well, you know, it's been so long. We have hair, but less of it. what we have is gray. We have children that are probably just about the age of the two people interviewing.
Absolutely.
Us. So it's absolutely. It's awkward being back here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what when the rat scale.
Is it a good or bad thing?
Well, when the rat scale, all of a sudden I've come up. I haven't been on campus in 20 years, and the Rathskeller is a Burger King. I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing.
And the bowling alley is gone. I used to spend a lot of time in the bowling alley.
We had a bowling alley.
We
bowling alley. Fish.
Mark Fisher.
Mark Fish.
We had a 12-lane bowling center downstairs.
Yeah.
And with leagues every night of the week, students would
pinball
sign up.
Pinball leagues.
That too.
Yes, there was also pinball leagues.
Outside the bowling
alley.
That's
right.
Bowling alley.
That's right. So if I wasn't up here on the third floor of the campus center doing news reports or producing sports spots, I was downstairs bowling. So, and seeing Gene.
And having a beer.
So
on occasion.
Let's talk about the news and the sports.
Okay. The exciting thing was coordinating the arrangements when we had to travel on the road. Whether we were going to Alfred University for a football game, or up to Plattsburgh, or out to Buffalo and Fredonia for the various SUNYAC games, we were responsible for coordinating the availability of plugging into a telephone line. We were responsible for getting the information from the sports information directors of the other colleges. It was us, and if we didn't do it, we were really flying blind.
And I remember going up to do a one game in particular up at Norwich University, and it was a horrible game. It was cold. It was miserable. It started out by the first score that Norwich had. They set off a howitzer. And the press box shook, and everybody else in the press box, you know, is just taking this as a matter of course. It scared the crap out of me because I didn't really know what to expect. And then there were two pretty serious injuries that resulted in a lot of downtime. Our cart machine froze. Whoever was at the station supposedly monitoring the game left. So we had 5.5 hours of airtime to fill.
What did you do?
We were interviewing peanut vendors. We were interviewing people from the other.
Watching the grass grow.
Well, it was just a long day, and I remember I speak for a living now. I'm an attorney, so but having to fill out 5 hours without moving and trying to minimize the downtime, it was pretty difficult at the time. And John, I don't know whatever happened to John Fallon. I don't know. He was not a lot of help in terms of trying to fill that airtime.
He was a late addition to the sports staff as an ex-jock, and he brought a lot of good color commentary and analysis to the reporting. But Alan talks about the story at Norwich. I can think of two very interesting stories being on the air during the 1974 undefeated season, where the Albany football team went 9-0. There was a game out at Mass Maritime College, or I guess Mass Maritime University, in Buzzards Bay, Massachusetts. And Gene and I used that experience as a bellwether. It was a Friday night game under the lights, one of the first games that we broadcast under the lights. And if you know Cape Cod from here, it's a long drive, about 6 hours. It was a cold fall evening right on the water. Albany won 75-6, which to this day represents the largest margin of victory that the Danes ever had. I came back with the most wicked, wicked head cold in all my life. And so now whenever Gene and I are feeling under the weather, we ask each other, is it the Buzzards Bay variety, because of the illness that I brought back to campus as a result of
that. Did it spread?
Well, it took about a week, I think, for me to shake it. And I'm sure that my roommate and my suite mates in Stuyvesant Tower caught some piece of it until it left the suite.
See, you should have gone out and got plastered.
See, it might even still be there.
That's true.
The alcohol would have killed anything. That's right.
Yes, we forget that back then.
Because we were
allowed to imbibe at 18.
Absolutely.
The second story that I have for you concerns the first basketball game that I ever had the opportunity to announce with Harvey Kojian, who was here a few hours ago. It was the fall of 74. We were sophomores. No, I'm sorry. It was the fall of 73. We were sophomores. The winter of 73, because it was basketball season. And we were going out to Utica College to broadcast the varsity game. And for some reason, the game was delayed. The fellow monitoring the board, and you talk about not paying attention. Rick Nadeau, Rick, if you're out there, shame on you, 27 years later. Rick wasn't paying attention, and he put us on the air at 8 o'clock when tip-off was scheduled. And we were about 15 minutes away from starting the game, and so Harvey and I were casually bantering between each other, saying things that you would not want to hear on the air, and we were on the air, and when Rick realized that, he quickly cut the feed and indicated that I should be committed to the hospital in Utica, among other things. And I have that on tape in my personal archives, and I will be sharing that with others as I find the time to burn other CDs.
Certainly sounds interesting.
It sure is.
One of the things that I remember is how much respect that Coach Ford gave us.
Mm-hmm.
We're 18 years old. I had never done anything like this before, and to this day I remember how he treated us as individuals. Sticking a microphone, taking 25 minutes to get a one-sentence question out, and what a mensch that he was. I suppose he probably still is, but it was just a very, very positive experience. Mm-hmm. Dealing with him. not so much with some of the other coaches whose names I will not repeat, but Coach Ford was and probably still is a class act.
I hope we get a chance to at least spend 30 seconds with him sometime before we leave this weekend, because he truly is a one of a kind.
Do you guys remember anything about Albany versus Siena?
Albany, Siena. Are we allowed to say that a five-letter word, that it would be a synonym?
No.
Okay.
I remember.
FCC rules.
That's right.
Okay.
Well, that's also my client, but we'll talk about that if you want.
Off the air.
No, the FCC is my client. But I remember one game that must have been, was it the fall of 74? When Rudy Vito, who was a great Albany Great Dane player, picked up one of the Siena fans, and I think threw the fan about four rows. I think it was fall of 74, but the dates, you know, when you get old, yep. The dates sometimes escape.
Well, I remember that the Albany-Siena basketball rivalry was the biggest rivalry in the sports year. And, well, there was a time after we graduated where Siena graduated and moved up to Division II and then Division I, and Albany was still Division III. So the Siena program was too good for the Albany program, right? And we stopped playing them. But I guess now that Albany is back on the sports map,
is Albany Division I now or one?
Yes, it is.
In basketball, right? As a matter of fact, they're in the American Conference, and they come to University of Hartford, which is right around my backyard. But anyway. The Potter Club, which was one of the fraternities on campus, I don't know if they're still here. They resided on Colonial primarily, and they were...
And Sutter's.
I can't even remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Well, they were our answer to John Belushi's Animal House movie. So they proceeded to paint a giant bedsheet with those two words, Siena blank, and would parade it around University Gym during a home basketball game, and you could tell that there was anxiety in the stands. After that game, the local sports guy on Channel 13 here in Albany, his name was Dave Smith. He proceeded to berate the Albany State fans for such poor behavior during the Siena-Albany basketball game.
It's tradition.
Talk about small world. When I graduated in 76 and relocated in the Hartford, Connecticut area, Dave Smith moved from Albany to Hartford. So he was doing sports in my backyard for another 10 or 15 years. And he proceeded to give me the same non-attention when I had a chance to see him at Hartford Whaler hockey games or around town, because Hartford, like Albany, is a pretty small place.
Albany's not that small anymore.
That's good to hear.
Okay, so what else do you remember about WSUA? Were you guys ever in the music department, or were you just primarily sports?
I did a fill-in show on Saturdays. Again, they had trouble for a month or two trying to fill a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock slot. I would try to make stories up and mention friends' names. I would make phony news stories up and work friends' names, in which used to drive you crazy. Speaking about Doug, I remembered doing an Albany Business College Albany JV game, and we didn't know the nickname of the Albany Business College basketball team, so I started calling them the accountants. And the accountants would bring the ball up, and, you know, credit the goal. It's just getting sillier and sillier, and I think you finally were listening to the game and dragged me aside.
Had a canary, I guess.
Had a canary. You were not pleased with that whatsoever.
Alan and I happened to be roommates senior year. We lived in one of the low rises on Dutch.
Schuyler
Hall, that's correct. And so I had a chance to recruit Alan, join the staff. I never spun records only because I didn't have much of a musical background. And although I found out from my peers that you didn't need a musical background to spin records, I didn't feel that I was that qualified to be an on-air personality. So I spent a lot of time in the news department as well. I was one of the original members of the first Ear Witness News broadcast, which was on Groundhog's Day 1973, with Dave Keller, Jeff Rahner, Harvey Kojan, a memorable time. I recall in the fall of 1974, when Albany was having their, when everyone was having their elections, and it was the Albany mayoral race. I was downtown getting sound bites to send back to campus during the election night coverage. And I had a chance to interview Mayor Corning for about a minute just to get a sound bite. Once again, he won unopposed practically because he was mayor forever in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
He was the one that originated the phrase, you know, God brought the snow, let God take it away, and wouldn't plow roads.
Oh, he was that guy.
Legend has it.
So tell me the difference between sports news and spinning records. So we're in the few who've done both, or all three.
You know, it really varies. Things were very, very loose. I remember, I guess it was my junior year or senior year, we started having playlists and starting having categories of records which did not go over very well at all.
You started that.
No. It was foisted upon me and other people, and there was a rather distinctive rebellion, especially those of us that were not doing this on a regular basis. We're having an
issue. We're being joined now by another alum. You want to introduce yourself, please?
Hi, Dave Gawetley.
Woo, 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 woo.
How you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Good.
Fantastic to see you, Dave.
Same here.
Same voice. 26 years later.
Same beard, too.
Well, a little more gray.
A little grayer.
So, when were you here?
70 to 74. Oh, let's move in.
We're going to shift over so everyone can get to the mic now. Just give us a minute. We're coming in. All right.
Hi.
So, tell us about SUA when you were here.
Wow. Well, let's put it this way. This was the meeting room, 315.
Where we had our staff meetings. Yes.
Right. Yes. And the studio was in the far corner. No. At least the newsroom, I thought.
Yeah, but that was back in the old 316.
Okay.
You know, this is 320, I guess.
This is still the staff meeting room.
All right. Staff meeting room.
It's much more well decorated.
CD library.
It has lights.
Yes.
It doesn't have beer cans. Or at least not now, that I can talk about. That's right, the drinking age is 21 now in New York, so I guess things are taken a little bit more seriously about that.
Yes. I can recall, as I was getting more involved with sports, Harvey Kojan and I wanted other voices to open up the live broadcasting for us, and Dave Gawetley was the first voice that you heard for a Albany Great Dane basketball introduction. We had an intro that was taped I remember the music. It was not Starship, Jefferson Airplane. There was a riff that Dave found, and he voiced over it. It's Albany Great Dane basketball with Harvey Kojan and Doug Lawanda. And
I can't remember that worth any.
Don't worry about it. You're not the only one.
Yeah.
If I find it in my personal library, I will send it to you.
I do remember the bulletin music that we used to have for the newsroom,
which was
Baba O'Reilly by The Who.
Yes. Yes.
We figured, you know, if that was, you know, if you heard that, we thought about speeding it up too, but. But no, boy, it's been a while. I still live in the Albany area, of course, and I actually just got off the air a few minutes ago at that other radio station up the street.
You were station manager when I was a freshman?
Yeah, I was.
72?
72, 3? 4.
Okay. A year later.
73-4.
Okay.
What positions have you held?
Well, I walked in this place the end of the first semester of my freshman year, which was 1970, and Littleton Harmon Smith was the news director, and they just moved the station up from Brubacher Hall, and there, lo and behold, was this big, clanking UPI machine, and I was just spewing yellow paper, and it was cool. So I said, yeah, I'd like to do news. So by the end of that year, I was news director. Littleton became station manager the next year, and we did a lot of things. I was news director for, 2.5 years or so, 2.5 years.
Do you remember what you tried to do, and I thought was very successfully, one semester, it was probably my sophomore year, which would have been 73, 74? Clock radio?
Oh, clock.
It was all news for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That we tried that. I remember Ear Witness News, too. I mean, you guys were a big part of that. I mean, you know, you kind of said, we want to do this. Go ahead. It's 10 o'clock Friday night. Go ahead. Everybody else wanted to go out and party.
From 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon every day, Dave had physically drawn a clock on a piece of paper and segmented out to fill a whole hour as to how long each piece was going to be, whether it be local news, international news, spots, PSAs, and he coordinated the news staff so that everyone had a shift. Everyone did a half an hour. There were taped stories. It was all news all the time for 2 hours during the afternoon, and it was pretty neat.
It was, and guess what? I'm still doing it. So
really,
for a living.
Yeah, for a living. So
did you ever play music or have any other things, any other involvements here than except for the news?
Well, I was station manager for half a year. Then I had to graduate. You know, which was a rough time for me, but, you know, figuring out I had to do 21 credits in a semester and deciding that I really wanted to do it in 4 years. So it was tough. And I'll tell you, it's rewarding being back here now because back in late 73, the SA president at the time, Mike Lampert, asked me if I would join a SUNY Central task force on FM radio stations, which had all of one meeting, and I seem to recall my impression now is that they were just trying to size us up to see that we weren't going to throw bombs or anything. We were able to draft what was then a lengthy application for an FM radio station, which Den Connor is a grad student, and I worked on. He did the technical section, and I filled out the the legal portions. Which now, you know, we have lawyers for these things, mm-hmm. but we got it drafted, and little did we know that it really wouldn't be a great idea to put the antenna for the new FM station on the top of the campus center. Knowing what I know now about FM radio, having it up on State Quad is much, much preferable. And so that got done, and I guess the next year that application was revamped and worked on by a couple of other people and finally submitted. And, you know, we're sitting in the result of that right now.
I remember at one point I worked as the advertising director, and we had one client. This was a Schlitz beer. So as a consequence, every 45 seconds, there was a Schlitz beer commercial. You could be doing obituaries, and it would be introed by a Schlitz beer commercial.
Do you remember any of these commercials?
Not a clue.
Does anybody remember these commercials?
Well, the thing was is that we could do those commercials because we weren't on FM. We weren't non-commercial FM radio. We were, you know, carrier current on 6:40 a.m. Right. in the dorms.
And you had to pronounce it very carefully.
Well, they were all pre-recorded by professionals.
Actually, you didn't. That was the other thing.
We would get it from Schlitz's national advertising company and put them on a cart, so it wasn't a question of us improvising.
Professional with a music bed and a singer. I've got them in my archives because I've burned them for some of my friends who are here this weekend. There were 4 20-second spots. It would be Bob Loomis for Schlitz, and then he starts singing. There'd be a music bed in the background,
and you're right, you know it.
That's right.
When you're good,
you feel it.
Yeah,
it's just one taste for Schlitz.
Yeah. So it had nothing. It had no involvement other than pressing play for the DJs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Well, yep, and
you could get the DJs to press.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. This seems so much safer somehow.
Yes, it does.
I mean, we also did. I mean, a little bit before that, we actually even ran some old time radio shows.
Oh yes, the Shadow.
Like that.
Yes,
yeah. And it was
the Lone Ranger.
Albany State Cinema, which was the campus organization which ran films, sponsored them. And, you know, basically it was because the person who ran the Albany State Cinema at the time really liked those old shows. Mm-hmm. And so we actually did the commercials and the whole bit, and it was kind of neat.
We actually stuck in some fake commercials.
Fake commercials.
I think we had the first condom commercial on radio. Yes, we did.
Well, followed by the commercial by hemorrhoid cream, I think it was.
By the way, we almost didn't, you know, the student government at the time almost wanted to quash our efforts to go FM mm-hmm. after April Fool's Day 1971 or something like
and
that.
And what happened there?
Oh, well, we kind of went wild. You know, we're doing live reports, or basically faking live reports from the tunnels and, you know, helicopters. it was kind of nasty, but we were having a lot of fun, and people in the dorms were having a good time, too.
Can you get into some more detail about that?
I don't think it would be a good idea.
On advice of
counsel. This is real radio.
This is real radio.
We'd like to stay on the air.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying to us.
Exactly.
You talk about spots, and Ernie will remember this because he was involved in producing a few of them. Harv and I had a chance to do one baseball game each year, and we were told during our second attempt to broadcast baseball that we needed to have it paid for because of the expense of getting a phone line out to the baseball field behind the old Indian Quad Pond. I guess, is it still there? That there's a pond out there somewhere?
Yes.
And a beautiful baseball field. Anyway, Antonio's Pizza on Washington Avenue was the sponsor. And so Ernie and Harvey and Andy Baum and a few others really turned their creative juices on and came up with 5-minute-long spots for Antonio's Pizza. And we played them during the broadcast of the baseball game, and it was tight and a lot of fun, and I'll share them with you as well.
But back then, we all sounded like we were Long Island Brooklynites. We were all Sopranos.
No kidding.
Big S and
really?
Small S.
the thing was, is the sports lines helped us do some interesting things, too. Because we used to have lines out to the old gym mm-hmm. for the basketball
right.
games, which allowed us to do live some speakers, like Ralph Nader and a few other people
yes.
who appeared out there. And we had those wonderful little wireless mic mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So we were actually, felt we were doing really good stuff with live coverage and people down on the floor interviewing people. And
actually, at one point, didn't Nate Salant get permission to broadcast Islander games?
Yes, I was going to get to that next. My senior year, spring of 76, Nate Salant, who will be joining us tomorrow, because of his contacts from his hometown of Spring Valley, New York, I'll tell the story. Basically, he was neighbors with Marty Appel, who at the time was the public relations manager for the New York Yankees. And Nate was able to secure permission for us to go down to Nassau Coliseum and broadcast 12 New York Islander hockey games back to Albany. You might recall that at that time, the Islanders were only 4 years old, having been formed back in 1972, so there was a following that was still to be born. Their competition, the New York Rangers, has been around for years. So
Island Ducks before that.
That's right, but in a minor hockey league.
The Ducks were not the Islanders. Pardon me, I've become a real big hockey
really?
Fan. And
the Ducks played in Comac Arena.
It was
Comac Arena, which by the way, had the single distinction of the players had to go through the snack bar to get on the ice.
So the Ducks didn't become the Islanders?
No. That was minor league hockey.
So the Ducks just...
Yeah, they went away.
Right.
So, in any event, twice a week, Nate, myself, and Michael Sky Kerwin would drive down on in the SA Suburban from here to the Nassau Coliseum, set up the remote, and broadcast back to campus New York Islanders hockey games. And
they had a Suburban?
Yeah. A big powder blue Suburban.
Yes, or a reasonable facsimile thereof, yes.
Well, we used to, actually, before then, SA had a station wagon,
uh-huh.
a little maroon station wagon, and we used to take that out for things. And we ended up, the folks from the ASP and us were in the car, basically ahead of the demonstrations, the anti-war demonstrations.
Really?
So that, you know, and we didn't have cell phones or anything, so we were basically just taping things to bring back. So it was
And this was to go over the air?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, boy. It was 71, maybe. Spring. You know, there were still several marches against what was going on in Vietnam. And I recall that basically the campus had, you know, a few couple thousand people literally marching down Washington Avenue. Mm.
Yeah, I think by the time we got here, 72-3 was
yeah, the revolution was over.
Right.
It was, like, boring.
Right.
But what was the experience like, and did you get to actually play any of these recordings over the air?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. And we actually went, we covered marches in Washington, in New York, and actually there we phoned stuff back mm-hmm. to the station while the events were going on.
I remember being down at Senator Buckley's headquarters in 1976.
William?
No.
The other, his brother.
His brother.
James?
James Buckley, mm-hmm. who is now, I think, the Honorable James Buckley mm-hmm. of one of the federal district courts, and doing a live remote from his headquarters mm. in a hotel in New York and going live. And we were, you know, sort of going out contemporaneous mm. with the commercial stations. Mm. And what we would do is we would have two of the other people that were there block the reporters from the phones.
so you could get on.
So we could get on the air.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So this would all come back into Albany.
This would, yeah. Well, would come back to Albany live.
Well, that's yeah. what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
They actually tied together. Election nights were always a lot of fun.
I'm glad you were going to mention that. I was about to ask you to segue into that.
We were, we actually formed a couple of little coalitions with Buffalo State, Stony Brook, and a couple of other college stations, and put reporters around during presidential elections. The networks were a lot more fun in theory than in practice. You know, we usually got a few seconds of audio here and there mm-hmm. from everybody, but we really geared up. As a matter of fact, on many of those nights, we actually took over the room that we're in now, which was the conference room next to the station, and broadcast from it. We set up desks. You know, we were you know, as good as NBC, we thought, at the time.
It was either you or David Shane who sent me down to cover Mayor Corning's re-election.
Okay, yeah.
We were
which
first.
One?
Yeah, exactly.
18-year-olds to vote.
Yeah, that's right. So that must have been... That had to be 72
yeah.
or 73.
That was the year.
It's an off-year election, so it had to be 73 or 75.
Well, 72 was a presidential
year. Election.
Right.
That was the year. Yeah. I actually got, for the first time, they gave college radio station credentials.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I went down to the Democratic Convention that year in Miami Beach.
Whoa.
And my ultimate product there was a half-hour documentary, which we aired, which, of course, was, you know, 6 weeks later.
50s record, so he came on, he put this 50s voice on, and for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, right. He was just playing.
I shall have that on Reel to Reel somewhere.
Which would bring a promo, because
right.
at midnight tonight, I understand the Saturday Night of Gold will become the early Saturday morning.
Excellent.
Eric Lonshine is the greatest master at this, and believe me, folks, tune in at midnight. This is going to be great. Because the other thing was, the other people who were in our studios were at least three members of the Fire Sign Theater. They were a really big comedy group of that era, who were very heavily produced, and, you know, and everybody was quoting their routines. So they were here, and they spent at least, you know, an hour with us live on the air. Mm-hmm. It was tremendous.
Speaking of being on the air live and time, it's about 8 o'clock now.
Exactly
8 o'clock. You're listening to WCDB Albany 90.9. It is the WSUA WCDB reunion, 40 years of WSUA, the predecessor to WCDB, which is celebrating its 25th year. Woohoo! Since I'm one of the only CDBers here.
Woohoo!
Funded by SUA people. Which was actually pretty cool considering it was AM radio.
A footnote. With regard to Dave and all of the news events that we covered, imagine watching some black limousines pull up to the campus center in the fall of 19 19- 75, a full year before the 76 election, and out comes this peanut farmer who's going to give a speech on campus. Of course, I'm referring to Jimmy Carter. And at the time, he was an unknown.
What was worse is one day having dinner in one of the cafeterias, and a black limousine pulls up, and a guy with wearing nothing but a fedora goes streaking through the cafeteria, grabs the bowl of lettuce, fills up little black duffel bags, and runs out back into the limo and drives away. That was the year of the streak in 74-75.
Oh,
and it was
okay.
One of the Potter boys, I think.
But we're not going to go into that.
Here I thought you guys were talking about agriculture. What's that?
Introduce.
Oh.
The other voice.
I'm the random voice. No, my name is Aaron Hornbeck. I'm local music director currently now. Have been a DJ with 90.9 FM WCDB Albany since 99. Not that long, but still sharing the WCDB love and loving sitting in on this little reunion here. It's been great.
Actually, I think one of the yearbooks has a picture of a streaker in it, in the lobby of the campus center.
Yep, that's correct.
The 75 yearbook.
We only get them on Fountain Day anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every day was Fountain Day back then.
Except when you shut it off.
It's a little too cold now for Fountain Day.
You know, I hadn't thought about college radio in years and years and years. And for the last 14 years, I've worked for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Connecticut. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I was handed a case by the FCC to shut down a pirate radio station.
Really?
And having to learn about Class D licenses and 3rd adjacent station protection, and these are issues that I hadn't thought about in decades. And to come back here and to have the experience of talking to you and seeing people with as much gray hair as I have, it's a lot of fun.
Well, here's the irony, folks. Remember I talked about drafting that FM application?
Yes.
Guess who works for the third adjacent to this station now?
Oh.
Oh. That's right. Absolutely.
Pointing to himself.
That's pointing right. To myself, right.
That's right. Huh. One of the many frequencies. Your top of the hour ID took about half a second. His top of the hour.
Well, wait a second. Ours used to. You didn't say subsidized completely by student tax.
That's right.
Paid to the Student Association.
State University of York at Albany.
No. We simplify things.
Is that because you're not subsidized, or is it...
A lot of our operational budget comes from a student activity fee that each student pays in. It kind of covers any club.
Yeah. Student tax. Yeah. Student tax.
We're sure. Subsidized, but we're just a little more modern in that.
Well, Central Council kind of wanted that in there.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Not a bad quid pro quo.
Right. And I remember the last year, we used to have like an operating budget of like $15,000 a year, which we'd go to buy reel-to-reel tapes. Remember what they are?
Yes, I remember.
Yeah. Reel-to-reel tapes and cassettes and supplies and everything else. And then, you know, it was one of those things, again, we filed the application, didn't go through, and half the people that filed it graduated, so we had to start from scratch. Yeah. And then the student council said, okay, look, this is it. $15,000, you've got $1,500 this year. Forget it. If you don't go FM, we're not going to give you more money.
Yeah.
Remember that? That was probably the
year
or two
before. Right after me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was like, you know, all the free tapes were
Yeah, you know, Ernie mentions the difficulties with budget and the constant deferral of our attempt to go FM. I don't know if you still hold these, but each year we used to have a end of the year radio station banquet, and in 74 and 75 we used to make about half hour parody tapes covering all the personalities of the radio station for that year. And two that I recall quite vividly, one was a Jeopardy game show parody, and the category was FM, and the answer is not within my lifetime.
Right.
The question being, when will WSUA go FM?
Well, it did switch over to FM.
Mm-hmm.
It's WCDB, but it's still the same station. So how do you guys feel about CDB now? Do you guys have any idea of what's going on, how the music is?
Why did they change it from SUA to CDB, though?
I can tell you that.
That's a good question.
WSUA is in use.
An FM?
No. It's an AM station, a Spanish-language AM station in Miami.
Really?
We don't make it to Saratoga Springs.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Hmm. Like you can't have the same call.
I'm so surprised. I had no idea.
I was always under the impression that they just wanted a new look in CDB, Capital District Broadcasting.
No, FCC Why? Wouldn't let you have it.
Oh.
Wouldn't let you have it. We kind of knew that going in, but...
I mean, all the other college stations, the FUV is Ford University, FDU is Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Yeah, but the thing is, first come, first serve.
Right.
Yeah. I still miss making reference to the university as SUNY, right, or the State University of New York at Albany. When they changed the name to the University of Albany or at Albany.
Start thinking of Albany. Georgia.
Yeah, it just didn't sound right. And it still doesn't, but I'm getting used to it.
If anybody asks, it's SUNY. Come on, same thing.
Yep.
SUNY, SUNY. It's very close. So it's not too far.
Okay.
It hasn't traveled that far.
Okay. Any other sports stories that you can think of?
Jeez. Let's see.
Yeah, is it time? Okay.
Well, thank you very much for having us. We're going
to
turn it back over if our DJ is paying attention. Looks like he's doing homework.
Friday night?
Something's
that's right.
That's true.
I saw papers and
you've offended
the guy in the booth never pays attention to what's going on.
I'm
going to
get so beat up later. Well, are you on? No, I'm still on. Oh my gosh.
You know what? As a final comment, nothing ever changes. Gene and I were walking up on the podium to come here about 2 hours ago, and what did we see? A young man with long hair and bell-bottom dungarees.
Yeah,
he's still here?
That was me.
All right, so you're listening to WCDB 90.9 FM. It is the 25th year anniversary for WCDB. It is the 40th year anniversary for WSUA. We will be broadcasting all weekend as the reunion goes on. To any alumni from CDB or SUA who are listening, if you want to give us a call, it's 442-4242. We're going to all be heading downtown, hanging out down there. Hopefully we'll see you there or see you up here at the station.
Teaser the post.
Yeah.